This is Stormtrooper 1. In case you were just way too busy to listen to our last show, this is what you missed.
It all ended with that freaking line, "Hey, Chrome Dome, smash." And then that was it. I'm like,
Why are you going to bring it back? You will always be scum. Rebel scum.
Rebel scum. Okay, all right.
Who wrote this?
All right. I'm starting to get the anger for Last Jedi again. But I'm going to try to calm myself. I'm going to find that zen place.
Hey, I just like that BB-8 managed to control an AT-ST, but for some reason can't fly an X-Wing on its own.
Yes. And also, you know, the panels just fall off miraculously when he takes over.
Is it like fall apart? Was it not complete? All the pieces just crumble around him and he's just on the legs of it? Jesus.
I hate you!
Language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue.
We would be honored if you would join us.
How are you feeling? Your latest workups and your condition indicate that all damage has been reversed. Recovery is total. I believe you have been quite fortunate. No further thanks are necessary, Commander, but you are most welcome. It is my function and pleasure as a medical droid to help and heal human beings.
I am a Jedi, like my father before me.
All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to Star Wars From the Back to Tank. I am Michael Flores, your host. And today in the studio with me is, of course, my co-pilot and Porg lover. Hello, David.
Hello. How's it going, everyone?
All right. So it's been a few weeks, but we are here with a bunch of Star Wars news. A lot of interesting reveals pertaining to some behind the scenes issues with Star Wars Solo. A standalone Star Wars movie. So we're going to have a lot of stuff to talk about today pertaining to that. In fact, Dave, I might as well just say now that this is going to be a very Solo-centric broadcast, which it should be.
It should be, because it's around the corner. Solo is, like, I think, just a couple weeks away.
It's now about 6 weeks away.
6 weeks away.
6 weeks away from seeing a new Star Wars movie. How awesome is that?
Oh, my God. I'm really excited about
we've
it.
We've never been in a position before where we get a new Star Wars movie literally 6 or 7 months later, right? It's been about six, seven months. We've never had that before. We're virgins, Dave. We're virgins.
This is the second time up.
And it hurts. It hurts.
It hurts.
Like the very first time, Dave. All right. So today, let's start with... Let me backtrack. I'm jumping ahead of myself here, Dave. Let's start with Last Jedi stuff first.
Okay.
Yes, Last Jedi's old news, even though it came out on DVD, what, about 2 weeks ago?
Yes.
Old news, but plenty to talk about still, because Mark Hamill and Rian Johnson and all the people involved are still doing their due diligence in promoting this movie. Now, Mark Hamill reveals an ending to George Lucas's Star Wars Episode 9. Now, this isn't directly tied into Last Jedi, but it's part of the whole Last Jedi press run, the promo run, the press junk. It's all these things that they're doing to help push the Blu-ray, DVD, digital download release. But I don't know if this is helping, Dave, more than possibly aggravating people who were already upset. As we know, Star Wars The Last Jedi has become officially the most divisive Star Wars film in history.
It is.
More so than Phantom Menace, more so than Empire was when it first came out. This is the biggest controversy outside of Jar Jar Binks.
I'll be honest with you, the more time has passed, yeah, I'd have to actually agree now. Something might be on the bottom of my list.
Oh, simmer down. We're going to be positive today, Dave.
Positive.
But I am questioning. Yes, we're going to be positive, but I'm questioning why even talk about something that we'll never see. Now, let's say Last Jedi was hugely successful when it comes to Star Wars fans. Let's say it was the best thing since sliced bread, right? Then talking about this type of stuff wouldn't do any damage. But I think talking about the what ifs at this point, when a lot of people were unhappy and unsatisfied with Last Jedi, I don't think it's helping.
No, it isn't, because like I honestly feel like the more that they actually talk about it, it's now just seeming like lip service and just making excuses.
Right.
You know, just at this point, own up to it. The movie's been made. It's out there. You can't change it at this point. And
I even though this is fun news, Dave, I just don't know if they should keep talking about the what ifs anymore.
But the thing is,
it's been done. It's been done. It's over with. We're not going to get this story. However, Dave, we're going to go ahead and go against everything I just said, and we're going to talk about it.
Yeah, because number one, it comes from Mark Hamill. So yeah, we love Mark Hamill.
And he loves to sow seeds of discontent. I mean, he doesn't give a fuck.
He doesn't give a fuck. He is the emperor.
Yeah.
He is the emperor.
All right. So according to IGN, IGN has reported that Mark Hamill reveals an ending to George Lucas's Star Wars Episode 9. Now, as you know, Dave, we've talked about this time and time again. Before Lucas handed the reins officially over to Disney, he also sent him a treatment of the three movies, of what he would like the stories to be. Here's my ideas. Of course, they threw them out the window and they did whatever they wanted. So Mark Hamill has revealed elements of the ending from those treatments for George Lucas's abandoned Star Wars Episode 9.
And if I could just point out one really, really impressive thing.
If it's going to make me mad, Dave, I'm going to throw something at you.
This is the one of the most impressive things about this.
Most impressive.
In regards to George Lucas, and in my opinion, just shows how much of a visionary he was. This was a plan he had in 1983.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that, dude. He had it planned from 1983 to 2011.
He should have just did it.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, that means that George Lucas was honestly
planning. What was he doing? Like, just counting his check, his money?
Yeah.
Like, Scrooge McDuck had, like, piles of dimes and quarters and gold everywhere.
It makes me wonder. It's
banging
like,
hot black chicks.
So this was his end game all along, was kind of like, you're going to actually do the first three.
Yeah.
You're going to do the original series, then you're going to do the prequels, and then he was going to wait until 2011 to start 7, 8, 9.
Yeah.
And I was like, going, that's some visionary work to actually think about, especially like storytelling wise.
Right.
I'm really interested to see if they'll ever release his old notes.
I don't want them.
Really?
I don't want it.
So that might be interesting.
That's like,
reading.
David, that's like having a chance at like a really hot chick. Let's say you went to the bar and this chick was banging, like just everything, big tits, big ass, you know, all everything that you like.
Yes.
Okay. And then you find out after you went home that she was digging you and she wanted to go home with you. But then your buddy's all like, hey, I went home with her. Here's some photos of what she looks like naked. That's what that is.
Okay, that's horrible.
I don't want that.
You don't want that.
I don't want nude photos of a chick I could have had, but I didn't. All right, so speaking to IGN about the differences in approach to the character of Luke Skywalker between J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson, Hamill suddenly changed tact and explained. I happen to know that George Lucas didn't kill Luke until the end of Episode 9, after he trained Leia, which is another thread that was never played upon in The Last Jedi. This is the first time we've heard that Lucas intended to end the Skywalker saga with Luke's death. While the original extended universe saw Leia trained as a Jedi Knight, although not by Luke, it also hadn't been publicly mooted as part of the film's storyline. Similarities remain in The Last Jedi. Luke seems to have met his end a film earlier than Lucas planned for, and Leia does somewhat controversially, according to them, show her skill with the Force. But it's clear that Lucas had different plans for the returning characters. It goes on to say, it's not quite clear which of Lucas's episode 9's this particular ending comes from. That doesn't even make sense. it's not quite clear which of Lucas's episode nines. Why? Why?
Because you got to remember, Lucas had loose plans.
Oh, is that what that means?
Yeah.
Okay.
He had loose plans for 7, 8, 9, and he was constantly thinking.
Right.
Okay. Because originally, you got to remember, back in 1983, he originally wasn't even thinking Luke was going to be connected to Darth Vader.
Yeah.
In any way. So right. As he's writing along, that's what I mean. This is amazing actually seeing Lucas, his creative mind at work. He's kind of like, okay, I'm going to take it this way.
Right.
Okay, I did go that way, but I'm going to take it another way, and I'm going to keep on going that way.
Yeah.
And, dude, speaking as a writer, that has to be hard. I mean, I've dealt with years and years of, like, writer's block where I'm just stuck on a story, and all of a sudden, I'm done. I can't think of where to take it. Lucas basically runs into a wall, and basically he goes, I'm going to take left. Okay, go ahead, go left.
Yeah. The article says the Star Wars creators' plans for a sequel trilogy were many and varied. Okay, so before Disney bought the rights and made one itself, before Return of the Jedi had been written, Hamill said he had seen 12-page outlines for each of Lucas's episodes 7 through 9. All right, that makes sense. So, however, Lucas seemingly abandoned the idea and incorporated many elements, including the idea that Luke had a strange sister into Jedi instead. Yep. Lucas continued to hint at his ideas for a sequel trilogy over the years, from familiar Luke, Leia, and Han returning as characters later in their lives to the less familiar, a fractured empire has devolved into an individual tyrannical worlds. However, the critical reception to his prequel trilogy apparently all but killed off Lucas's drive to continue with the series for some time. Many of the suggested story ideas are seemingly contradictory, indicating that Lucas never had a set plan. Pre-Disney takeover, Hamill had said that Lucas' ideas was to have Luke returning to a cameo in Lucas's episode 9, but his new comments seem to indicate a much more central role. And this is common. Like they're acting as if this is like something odd that he didn't have a set plan. When you're writing a movie and a franchise and you don't have a set script yet, you are writing notes. You're writing, you're outlines, rewriting, you're changing things up. You're like, well, that doesn't work. You may be, you know, going out to dinner with your family and then you're thinking, okay, well, you know what? That works. And then you jot it down on another piece of paper. It's an evolving process. And that's the beautiful thing about George Lucas's mind and what he did with Star Wars is that he wasn't tied to just one idea. He had plans and he had a theme and he had a general idea of where he wanted to start and where he wanted to end. But the middle always was evolving because that's what some of the best writers do.
Exactly. And like, to further piggyback on this article, I actually found another article that actually talked about that. In a 1983 interview, Hamill revealed that Lucas was considering having Hamill come back many years later to play an older Luke who would hand Excalibur down to the next generation. And that's Hamill's exact words from Lucas. Like, he was thinking Luke would be like a King Arthur type of legend where it all of a sudden he hands down his lightsaber as like Excalibur down to a next generation. And with amazing presence, Hamill mentioned that Lucas was considering this for 2011, and at that point was nearly 30 years away. And dude, what this just shows is we've always, you know, I feel guilty when the prequels came out. I was one of the few that basically, I was one of the many actually that basically just hated and rallied against George Lucas.
Yeah, because you're a penis.
Yes. But in hindsight, afterwards, it's amazing what George Lucas has done.
The prequels are not as bad as people like to pretend they are.
They're not. They're not as bad.
No, they're not.
And like, honestly, the fact that basically, in my opinion, George Lucas should be considered one of the greatest filmmaking minds that
he has ever existed. Yeah, he is, without a doubt.
Well, everyone's always said, well, he's only done Star Wars.
What else do you need to do to prove yourself? I mean, Jesus Christ, the guy has created a franchise and a beloved franchise that has transcended one generation and has moved on and gone to the next. So what does he need to do to prove himself?
What does he need to do?
Make a better Howard the Duck movie? What? All right. So let's move into some Solo news here. Han Solo movie actor insists original directors weren't prepared for Star Wars. You think?
I sense your anger welling in.
I don't even think Ryan Johnson was prepared, but that's another story. All right. So according to, oh my God, can you please quit giving me ad blockers, you son of a bitch? Solo, a Star Wars story, has been a problem to production, with Lego Movie directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller helming the film before departing the project in June due to creative differences. This is old news, but yes, eventually we're going to get to some new news here. With Lucasfilm, an actor on the anthology film who declined to be named, so take this as a grain of salt.
Well, that's the smartest thing to do. You don't, they don't want their names
out
there.
But also, how do we prove this as actual fact? I'm inclined to believe what we're about to read.
Yes.
However, take it as a grain of salt. I'm not going to do some shoddy journalism here and just pawn it off as fact.
No, no, absolutely.
He declined to be named and is not one of the headliners. And he opened up about the duo's departure and the troubles that plagued the production. In an interview with Vulture, the actor noted that Lord and Miller often shot more than 30 takes, many times just to get something, quotes, different. Phil and Chris are good directors, but they weren't prepared for Star Wars, the actor said. After the 25th take, the actors are looking at each other like, this is getting weird. Lord and Miller seemed a bit out of control. They definitely felt the pressure. With one of these movies, there are so many people on top of you all the time. The first assistant director was really experienced and had to step in to help them direct a lot of scenes.
Is that a bad sign to a director when your assistant director has to step in?
Assistant director doesn't direct, Dave. They're mostly on the business end.
That's true.
So if an assistant director has to come in and say, hey, I'm going to be the big shot now, I'm going to show you how to do this right because you don't know what the fuck you're doing. There's a problem. I mean, yes, the assistant director is a force to be reckoned with, and many times they make that transition into the creative, but for the most part, the assistant director is not a creative. He's more on the technical and business side of things.
No, you're right.
He's making sure people, you know where they need to be. He's not creative.
He's not the one that's calling the shots creatively. He's basically the assistant director is making sure the director has his space.
Yeah, that's like the accountant of a business coming out of his office saying, hey, you know what we should do, guys? When you sell your next Honda, I think what you should do is you should focus more on the drivability.
I think
the great gas mileage that you get. Like, come on, you go back and count change, okay, and balance my books. Let me sell the vehicle.
I think the main question, though, is, I mean, I'm sure for a lot of people who don't or who are laymen to like all the filmmaking thing, in your opinion, does 30 takes too much?
That is fucking ridiculous.
It's too much.
You're pushing it with 10.
Yeah. I mean, that's ultimately what my question would have been is like, okay, in your opinion,
don't you remember our film school days? It would be 3 to 4 and then maybe a condom shot. We called it just for protection, just to be safe. You know, we would get 3 or 4 to make sure we're good. And then we're like, okay, and if we were happy, what did we do? We're like, okay, we're happy with these, but let's get one more just in case.
One more just for baby Jesus.
Dude, can you imagine standing there for 25 takes? Holy shit.
Yeah, I could see why the cast must have gotten a bit frustrated or confused as the person reported that basically they were just thinking that this is strange.
Yeah. So a spokesperson for Miller and Lord denied this claim, calling it completely inaccurate. She did not explain in what ways the source's claims are inaccurate or make the directors available to the website for comment. However, as the source is unnamed, it's difficult to verify the truth.
Yes. Of course.
In contrast, the actor said that director Ron Howard, who took over following Lord and Miller's departure, normally only required 2 or 3 takes, like a professional, Dave.
Yes.
That's a pro, to get a scene done. According to the source, morale on the production improved following the change-up as well. When Howard came on, he took control, and you could feel it. People want to be told what to do. Not everybody is a leader, Dave, and sometimes they need that ant line so they know what direction to go.
And if you've seen behind the scene videos of Ron Howard at work directing, he's a very person that basically he'll take a take, or even in the middle of the take, he's going to insert himself. So no, do it like this.
Yeah.
And be really quick about it.
Now, this is a bit of interesting news here as well, is The actor also addressed some of the rumors surrounding Howard's reshoots, which are said to be quite extensive. There has been some rumors, Dave, saying that 85-90% of the movie has been completely reshot. And in many cases, do-overs of the previous versions following Lord and Miller's departure. It's exactly the same script, though, which, I mean, if there wasn't a problem with the script, why change it up? They're filming exactly the same things. There's nothing new, he said. Lord and Miller use whole sets, but Ron is just using parts from those sets. I guess they're not shooting wide angles, maybe to save money. Now, well, if you're happy with the wide shot, number one, the biggest problem we've heard is what? We heard that there was problems with performances.
Yes.
And wide angles is not what captures the performance. Nope. It's the coverage. If those were the problems, the actors not feeling it, not working in sync with the director, then what's going to happen is you're going to have to get those coverages, because that's where the performances truly matter. It's when the camera is up in your grill.
Yeah.
Now, this goes to the next topic, Dave, that people are saying Ron Howard is getting sole directing credit for Solo, A Star Wars Story, and he should be. This is a very different case when you want to point to a movie like Justice League that had just come out, where people are pointing, saying, well, Josh Whedon didn't get credit, and Zack Snyder did, and he wasn't even involved for a year and a half. But the difference is this, is what we saw was pretty much Zack Snyder's movie in terms of the shots. There were a few reshoots that they needed to bring Henry Cavill back to do, but the movie itself was done. The movie was done. Whedon came in for post-production. If you remember the last bit of news, he was there to do post-production and to do some minor reshoots.
Yeah,
and that is why Whedon did not get a directing credit.
Yeah, and if I'm not correct, Whedon basically even stated that this isn't his film, it's Zach's film.
Yeah, but a movie doesn't become a movie until you're editing it, and Josh Whedon's the one who pieced it together. So Josh Whedon's just trying to remove himself from a movie that wasn't liked amongst critics. All right, so Ron Howard will take solo directing credit for Solo, A Star Wars Story. The Da Vinci Code filmmaker, come on, this guy's done so many better movies than fucking Da Vinci Code. Jesus. He was put at the helm of the upcoming anthology spinoff after then directors Phil Lord and Chris Miller were removed by Lucasfilm. All right. So speaking at the third annual animation festival in California over the weekend, the Lego Movie duo, who met in high school and have worked on the likes of 21 Jump Street. Man, those are some cutting edge movies.
They were good.
If you like. Okay. If you like the smell of shit, then yes, I would agree. They revealed they would not be sharing the director credit with Ron, who reshot some of their earlier work and completed the rest of the movie. Well, of course they wouldn't. Ron Howard has he reshot so much, he even had to recast certain parts because the actors weren't available to come back to set.
Yeah.
They had
schedule problems.
They had other obligations. So of course Ron Howard's going to get credit for this movie. Directing credit, that's a given. The moment they said that he's coming back, and then it was announced that he's doing 80 some percent of the movie, he's redoing 80% of the movie or more, of course he's going to get the credit.
And that's why I'm happy you brought up the fact that this is different than other,
very very different
other situations where directors had to step in. Even like in, say, like in the Star Wars universe, like Rogue One, Gareth Edwards. I mean, they did do reshoots for Gareth Edwards, but Gareth Edwards still had the...
They redid some action sequences.
Yeah.
And Gilroy?
Yeah.
Gilroy came in with editing.
Editing.
So he came to take a more active role in the editing room. And that is why Gilroy did not get directing credit, because most of the movie...
was already done.
Was already finished. All right. Han Solo movie villain is from the Star Wars Legends comics. Now, if you don't want
to be excited about this.
Yeah, I love it. Now, if you don't want spoilers, right, Dave, we should probably warn people to take their headphones off for a bit. It isn't anything that's going to ruin the plot, though, right?
No.
No, not at all. I don't think knowing who the villain is, it's not that type of movie. It's not like, you told me the villain in the Superman and in Justice League, and now it's ruined because I read the comic books and I know what he does. Oh, no, it's not one of those scenarios, right?
No.
All right. So Han Solo movie, new information about the villains have been revealed thanks to some new merchandise. As it turns out, some of the villains in the movies are connected to the non-canon legends now, comics that were put out by Marvel in the late 1970s. A lot of information about the Solo movie has slowly begun to trickle in since the release of the first trailer last month. And now that the movie's only a few weeks away, more promotional material is coming out, shining more light on the mysterious Star Wars spinoff movie. One of the new action figure accessories from Solo, A Star Wars Story, is for the villain Infis Nest. Is that how you'd say that?
Yes.
A character that is shown in the trailer. His name was confirmed a while back, but no other information about the character was available until now. The specific toy is called a swoop bike, and it's what Infis Nest uses to get around on. But upon further investigation, it appears that Nest is part of a Star Wars Legends category. The description on the back of the box reads, "The Cloud Rider gang, led by Infis Nest, terrorizes the skies atop the mean-looking swoop bikes. Little more than engines with seats. Swoops are hard to control, but capable of incredible speed." Now, swoop bikes, they're different than speeders that we saw in Return of the Jedi, correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Swoops were introduced to the mainstream outside of the comics. I believe they were first introduced by way of Dash Rendar in Shadows of the Empire.
That's why I love this callback to this character, because it calls back to one of my favorite moments in Star Wars history, which was the Dash Rendar trilogy.
Yeah. Which I'm hoping we get that feel, dude. I mean, Dash Rendar's from the underworld as well. He was kind of like the Han Solo in a lot of ways.
I mean, if you guys have been listening to us and everything on our Star Wars Rebels, when we got to see Dash Rendar's ship make an appearance in Rebels, it was a big deal to us.
Right.
Because that ship and that entire storyline had so many great characters, and Infis Nest was actually one of the coolest villains in there because it dealt with Dash. And that's a character that any old school Star Wars fans is hoping they want to see that character come back.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, the article says it's important to note that the Solo movie probably won't tell Infis Nest's story.
Yeah.
Instead, the name of the gang will more than likely be used along with their choice of vehicle as a way to basically bring back old elements from Legends and also to kind of beef up the world of Star Wars, which I'm okay with that. When you're delving in things like this, like a standalone, and you're hearkening back to the old days of Star Wars, I feel like that's what you should do. I mean, that's what Lucasfilm has said since the very beginning, that they have put all these retconned elements in a little box called Legends.
Yes.
And they may go back from time to time and pull out little things and bring it back into canon.
Oh, yeah.
And help Star Wars feel cohesive. And I'm a fan of that. Bring things. I don't mind if you make it new and make it different, but stay true to what, you know, Ralph McCreary and Lucas had kind of designed for these movies. I think that's a smart move. It helps Star Wars feel cohesive, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It keeps that feel of Star Wars in Star Wars, you know, because like if you don't do anything that basically does that callback to Ralph McQuarrie or anything, I don't know. It just doesn't feel like Star Wars. It just feels like an atypical sci-fi. And that's not what Star Wars is. Star Wars is a franchise.
Yeah. It says also that Solo, A Star Wars Story, has met with some resistance from some hardcore fans. Who's complaining about this? It hasn't even come out yet. What are they complaining about?
Well, besides
the Millennium Falcon, which we've already discussed, that's an easy fix. It's not a big issue.
Because like people do not like the people will always complain about like, oh, they're good. Change it just a little bit. And it's going to annoy me.
Change it from what? They've never seen Han Solo's story before. They're not remaking anything. They're not changing anything.
Yes.
People.
Remember, positive. We got to keep positive. Keep positive.
Yeah. Now, Dave, there's been a lot of talk of late about Star Wars and the Disneyland, Disney World expansions that are happening.
Yes.
And we are getting very, very close very close to seeing this all become a reality very, very soon. They are working on it. There's been numerous reports, images, pictures, things popping up all over the internet of the construction and the rebuilding of parts of Disneyland, the closing down of sections. And it seems like the setting up of this Star Wars expansion in Disneyland is being laid out first in the upcoming Grand Admiral Thrawn novel. So some of the elements that we're going to be seeing in this new Star Wars land is actually going to be seen in this book.
Yep.
And which is really cool.
Now that makes me want to get the novel more.
Yeah. Now laying the groundwork for Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, we're still just a few months away, 2019. I'd say that's more than a few months, but 2019 is the said or stated opening of Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, the twin expansion lands that will be opening up at both Disneyland and Walt Disney World. But the narrative groundwork for the new parks is already being set up, specifically the new novel Thrawn Alliances from Timothy Zahn will send Darth Vader and the Grand Admiral together on a mission to Batuu. Now, according to IO9, it's the same planet that will serve as the setting for Galaxy's Edge.
Yep.
Now, not a lot of information has been leaked about what exactly is going to be at Galaxy's Edge, but Disney hasn't said too much, but only that it's a remote trading port and it's one of the last spots before Wild Space, which is a new element in the new era of Star Wars. But taking the chance to build out the lore before the park opens is a smart way to get fans interested ahead of time. Honestly, I think fans are going to be interested regardless, even without this book. But again, to find out that they're using a book to lay down the groundwork for these new Disneyland expansion lands, it shows you their commitment to telling one cohesive story, even when it pertains to a theme park.
Yes. Because remember, we've already discussed that basically the Star Wars Story Group and, you know, Lucasfilm and Disney, they are trying to go cross platform in all.
They want to cross streams, Dave.
They want to cross streams.
Maybe play some sword fighting. Don't get any urine on me, though, please. But let's work together.
Yeah. The interesting part is going to be,
you can shake me dry.
Can Star Wars actually do the one thing, in my opinion, that Marvel just has a problem with cross-platforming? Like, they when they try to cross-media, it doesn't go too well. But Star Wars, they've done okay so far.
I think Star Wars was built for multimedia storytelling. It's not new to Star Wars. They have been doing transmedia before transmedia was even a thing. We've talked about it in depth with Shadows of the Empire and what Lucas did with that, and the fact that he did everything but make a movie for Shadows of the Empire. You had a video game, you had a book, you had the comic book, you had the toys, you had the marketing at grocery stores and restaurants, fast food joints. You had everything but the actual movie, and that's transmedia. You're telling story through cross platforms. That's amazing. So Disney or Lucasfilm has been gearing audiences towards that type of storytelling for years, and it's kind of tried and true. That's why the Lucasfilm Story Group, I think, has been able to successfully tell these stories and make them feel complete and whole and part of one world, because they're following the groundwork that George Lucas had already laid out back in the 80s and 90s. Marvel, this is a new concept. Transmedia is a fairly new concept to a lot of people, and it's very hard to tie in everything. You're never going to see Marvel tie in comic books and movies. They're having difficulty just doing movies. And some people may disagree and say, Marvel's great! But they're just, and I say this all the time, but Marvel has turned into a string of jokes with some action scenes.
Yeah.
Outside of Black Panther just came out, which was an exceptional Marvel movie. But before that, I mean, Thor Ragnarok was just a joke. The entire thing was a joke. They had a beginning for 5 minutes and an ending for 10 minutes. And then in between was a bunch of
inside jokes.
It was just a bunch of nonsense. It was like a buddy cop film.
Yeah.
It was just odd. And yes, they're successful movies, but eventually that's going to get very tiresome, I think, to audiences. There's an expiration date on that type of storytelling. And there's going to be that moment where people say, you know what? I don't know why I'm watching this. This isn't really good. There's no story. How many more times can I laugh at Chris Hemsworth or Tony Stark or Chris Evans doing something silly that they've done 20 other times and in a movie before? Tell me a story now. Tell me a story, please, Daddy. Let me sit on your lap. Tell me a story. And I don't think Disney will be doing that with Star Wars because A, it's a separate franchise, and B, there's different people controlling it. And Kathleen Kennedy, who's been on board and who's been around Lucasfilm and Steven Spielberg, George Lucas for decades, she kind of gets it. She understands how the pattern works. Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so last bit of news is some great news for fans out there, Dave. I know I'm ecstatic, especially if you're a gamer or you want to start getting into gaming.
Oh, yeah.
When it's related to Star Wars. Dave, take us through this particular bit of news, because this is more your world than mine.
Yeah, this is actually kind of really exciting. This is coming from Rolling Stones. It's a report that EA Vancouver is working on an open world Star Wars game.
Oh!
Now, just to quickly tell people what the difference between an open world game and a MMO. Open world is more like, think Grand Theft Auto, think Uncharted.
But if you don't know those games, just give them a definition.
It's basically
open world.
You're basically put into a area or a city or a state where you can do multiple missions, go anywhere you want, and do multiple things.
Yeah, you're free to roam.
You're free to roam, but you still actually have a narrative that you follow, a story that you actually follow throughout the game. And MMO, it's more role-playing driven, where you're basically, you write your own story.
Right, so this is going to be a lot more versatile than what we're getting right now at EA with the Old Republic game, which is a fabulous game, but it's not quite open world.
Yes. So going on, a new AAA open world Star Wars game is in development by EA Vancouver Studios, as reported by GameStop. The news initially was found in an EA job posting for a lead online engineer.
Oh, look at that.
Though it looks like the publisher pulled any mention of an open world after news hit. EA is looking for an engineer to lead a team to deliver online features for a Star Wars open world project.
That's amazing.
GameStop reported. While not much else is given, the listing does require applicants to have experience implementing online features such as matchmaking,
asynchronous
interactions, live services, and service host migrations. While it's hard to say that EA is planning on an open world Star Wars game, it could be a reboot of Visceral Star Wars game back in October.
Now, why are people just grasping here? Because why would it be a reboot of this Visceral game that we've heard for years now,
well, Star
that
Wars,
never came about?
Star Wars Visceral game, which was Star Wars 1313, was originally to be an open world game centered around the underworld of Cloud City.
Right.
And a lot of people were excited about it. It was going to be Grand Theft Auto, Red Dead Redemption meets Star Wars.
Damn.
So a lot of people were disappointed when they announced that it was going to be canceled. So back in October, EA announced it was closing the studio, moving its Star Wars game to a new unannounced studio. So from all intents and purposes, a lot of people are saying, okay, they're taking all the elements that Visceral started and moving it over to EA so that EA could take over. And they basically there's been rumors that basically the original director for the Visceral games Star Wars was contacted by EA, Amy Hennig, who does Uncharted 2. So a lot of people are really excited about it. This is actually really big news for gaming wise, because coming off of Battlefront, EA has to bounce back. They have to actually come back with something that will make everyone happy. Ultimately, that is what they have to do now. They have to come out with a game that is going to not just make them happy, make everybody happy. Because the negative publicity they got from Star Wars Battlefront, just left a huge black eye on LucasArts. And it got bad to the point that basically Disney had to actually come down from their castle and actually tell EA, hey, knock it off. Give the fans what they want or else. And that's all they said. And it was a really dark moment for EA, because there was talk that Disney and LucasArts was going to take away the licensing away from EA.
Right.
Which would be devastating to that company.
Absolutely.
So the fact that they released this statement that, okay, we're going to come out with a Star Wars open world game, definitely has everyone's eyes and ears perked up a little bit.
My dick is perked up.
But the question becomes, can they do it? You know, EA's track record hasn't been the stellar thus far, but
I think they need to move away from EA. To be honest with you, I don't have a problem with EA. I know a lot of people do. A lot of gamers recently, over the last 3 or 4 years, they've managed to garner a lot of hate from fans. And I understand some of it, but it's like the toxic nature of Rian Johnson. That's the reason why we're not going to see his trilogy soon. Whether or not Lucasfilm wants to stand next to their project, that's not the point. The point is that there's a lot of toxicity around Rian Johnson because of the lackluster reception of Last Jedi. And same thing with EA. EA is just toxic right now. And it has the mishandling of Battlefront 2, even though I enjoy the game, it was mishandled. The release was grossly mishandled, and it created a lot of bad feeling towards EA. And there's just too much. There's too much poison around right now, and I feel like it would not be smart to use them anymore. If I were Lucasfilm, I would either A, bring LucasArts back, or B, start subcontracting out to other gaming companies besides EA. The one that does Rockstar games, right? Rockstar?
Yep, Rockstar.
Rockstar does great. In fact, they have their handle. They have the handle on open world. They're doing a new one with Red Dead Redemption, and of course Grand Theft Auto. They kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but they've kind of pioneered the open world format, right?
No, you're right. I mean, they're one of the leaders in the open world format, and if you were to actually give Rockstar the chance to do a Star Wars game, I have no doubt that they would knock it out of the park.
It would be fantastic, and there's no like bad feelings or juju about them right now. Everything's good. I feel like EA has squandered their
chance.
I feel like anything they do right now in relation to Star Wars is just going to be a negative because of the way fans feel about it.
I agree with you to one degree, but basically, like, the only thing that I say, well, they could probably pull their butts out of the fire, is because Star Wars is such a beloved franchise that I think the love of Star Wars will, you know, not to sound cheesy or anything, but the love of Star Wars will outshine any negativity. That's why I think, yeah, we have that negativity with Rian Johnson right now with Last Jedi, but I think given time, people will just move on from it and we'll get the next movie. We're going to get Solo, and I think we're going to be fine. Solo's going to be fantastic. I think Ron Howard's the beacon of light that we're hoping for, and Rian Johnson's Last Jedi is just going to go down the annals of Star Wars history as basically
annals. Oh,
but it'll go down as a footnote in Star Wars history.
Yeah,
you know,
I agree. All right, Dave, you know what? This concludes our discussion on Star Wars this week. I'm having problems forming sentences today. I think
I think you need some time in the back to tank.
Well, I've only slept 2 hours last night, so I have limited power to my brain.
I think we need to put you in the back to suit and the back to tank then.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so I want to thank everybody for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you. May the Force be with us.
Hello, this is Stormtrooper 1, and if you've missed any portion of the show, you can always head over to fromthebacktotank.com and listen to the show at your leisure. We're also on Stitcher, Smart Radio, Stitcher.com, search Bacta, and add us to your favorites. Thank you, and listen responsibly. And may the Force Week is executive produced by Michael Flores and Dustin Lucas, hosted by Michael Flores, David Zabal. You can find out more about our show by going to www.fromthebacktotank.com. You can also find us on Twitter at FromBackToTank, as well as Facebook, facebook.com/FromTheBackToTank.